Hello there. Welcome to the Visionary Practice Solutions podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Sarah, and I am here to talk all things private practice, helping you to build your vision of the private practice of your dreams. Hey guys. So today's episode is based off of a question that was posed on a Facebook group that I am part of. And while trying to answer it as best I could on the Facebook forum, I realized this is kind of an entire episode in itself. So I wanted to address that today and in its own episode. The question essentially posed was how to change your insurance panel to more desirable insurances, higher paying insurances like PPOs, and getting more self-pay patients. It sounded like the person was really stuck with a lot of HMO plans that were really just paying pennies on the dollar. And so let's unpack this first a little bit. There's a couple of questions that come up whenever we are looking at our reimbursements and we're thinking about, you know, possibly even dropping an insurance because we just aren't seeing the cash flow come in and it's seeming hardly worth it. The first problem is you're just not sure if patients are even going to pay if you drop their insurance. And it's pretty big commitment to make. Some insurances, not as much as others, they let you kind of come and go as you please. But other ones like, you know, Medicare have, you know, potentially a 2 to 3 year penalty for dropping out of the insurance. So it can be kind of scary. So, you know, how do you know if your patients are going to pay? Another question is, how do I evaluate this to even begin to know how to make this decision? And then the third thing is, you know, okay, well, what if I do it and then people just leave the practice? Like, how is this going to affect me long term? And I think there's really a couple of things that need to happen. You kind of need to have a process to make these decisions and then make a plan that you're actually really comfortable with. So for me, this happens in kind of two concurrent pathways. The first pathway is researching the desired panel of insurances or patients. And the second part is analyzing your existing panel. So let's start with the researching your desired panel of patients. Where are these patients at in terms of your community? So is there a particular employer that you know is offering these PPO plans that you want to be pulling in these patients? Is there a certain, you know, demographic area or geographic area where, you know there's a lot of maybe retirees that have disposable income? You know, are there other practices in your area that are seeing a lot of these PPO patients? And I'm not even talking the same specialty. I'm looking more at like your referral sources. So once you've identified where these patients actually are within the community and what other practices they are currently going to, that's where you want to direct your marketing right away. You want to be trying to pull those people in to your practice. And that could look like, you know, going and making contact with this referral provider and let them know, hey, my office is overfilled with this particular insurance. I really want to be having more of these particular insurance people and see if they'd be willing to, you know, kind of create a little bit of a referral program with you and talk more about the services that you offer. And then your outside marketing, which is going to be directing more of your Google ads, maybe your social media ads, and actually like geotagging that. If you don't know how to do that, there are, you know, webinars and all kinds of YouTubes out there on, you know, how to do that kind of thing. But honestly, this is where I just have a marketing company working on doing that for me. So that's part one. Part two, you're going to start working on at the same time, and that's going to be your analysis of your existing panel of patients. So this is a little bit of a billing audit. Your billing company should be able to give you this information. Your EMR can print out reports. There's all kinds of ways to get this info. But basically what you're looking for is you want to look at maybe your top 10 or top 15 codes that you typically bill. And then you want to know what each insurance is reimbursing you on average for each of those codes. And really, once you get that in an Excel spreadsheet, it's pretty obvious which ones are paying significantly less than the others, and significantly less than market value, which, remember, you're kind of comparing your market value to being your Medicare rates. That's what everybody else is basing off of. So make sure you include your Medicare rate in that. The other part of it is knowing what percent of your current patient panel is each insurance. And this will look really interesting when you start checking in on the actual numbers, you're going to see some that are low paying that are maybe 1-2% of your patient panel. That's kind of an easy decision, but you might actually find that there's a really low paying insurance, maybe even your lowest, that's actually a pretty good percentage of your patient population. And a good example was I went through this a few years ago in my practice, and I realized that just for my area, Medicare was actually the worst paying insurance that I had. It was also 25% of my patient panel. So that's a much bigger project. That's something you have to come at a little bit differently than if it's a little onesie, twosie insurance for your practice, right? Now that you have that information in front of you, I find that there are a couple of approaches that seem to work the best for most people. And it really just depends on your comfort level with risk and what those numbers say. So the first approach is you take the lowest reimbursing insurance that has the lowest percent of your practice, and you drop it and you see what happens. And these are going to be the 1%, 2%, 4%. If you are really full and backed up in your schedule clinically, maybe you're booked out 2, 3, 4 months, which has certainly happened to me, that's when you know it won't make such a huge impact on your cash flow to drop a insurance that maybe is only 2% of your practice or 4% or even 5% of your practice. Really depends on how busy you are. Now, something to keep in mind if you are just dropping an insurance, you do have to send notification to your patients. You are going to get patients that are going to be calling, that are going to ask about it. You're going to have patients that are surprised. So you need to have a really good scripted response and way of answering questions for your staff so that even when new patients call, when established patients call, and you're no longer taking that insurance, they have a really good script ready to go so that they're not focusing so much on the fact that, oh, we don't take your insurance anymore, and therefore we can't see you, because that's like the next logical conclusion that patients come up with. That's not the case. We want to make sure that these patients know we can, in fact, see them, and we are offering a discounted cash rate because their insurance just doesn't cover very much. And if it's put the right way, you will lose even less of those patients, even though it's maybe only 1 or 2% of your practice. So something to keep in mind, your staff needs to be really prepared to have this conversation with patients. Now, the second way of doing this, the second approach, which is really what I like to use if, you know, one of the low paying insurances happens to be a larger percent of my practice, like Medicare was for me, you start offering more cash services that no insurance takes or covers. And this allows you to make an offering to see if your current patient panel is even willing to or can afford to pay out of pocket for things, and what percent of those people, you know, are willing to pay out of pocket. I feel that this is important to know because it gives you a sense of roughly how much of your patient group you're going to be able to retain after you drop this insurance. It's not that you're not going to. It just is, you know, how long are you going to wait? Are you going to be able to retain any percent of this? Or do you need to bulk up your patient numbers elsewhere because this is a group that absolutely is not going to pay out of pocket? And that can happen. You just need to know that ahead of time so that you can appropriately front load your patient base, and then you can drop it and it'll drop back down to your current cash flow level. This will also give you an idea of, you know, when new patients are calling that have that insurance, roughly what percent of them will actually go ahead and make an appointment with you and be willing to pay out of pocket. Now, you're going to need to focus, if you're doing cash services and you're implementing them for the first time, you're going to need to focus on something that your current patient group already needs, right? So something that you can think, you know, 50 to 70% of your patient group needs this. That would be a really great cash service to try to implement first, because you're going to have a high number of people that you're going to be talking to about this service. This gives you a lot of practice in discussing with people, you offer this, it's not covered by insurance, and dealing with people's objections and reactions to that thought process. There are a lot of patients that assume if they pay what they pay to insurance that it should be covered. boy, do I agree with that, but that's a whole different conversation and none of us get to make that decision. So we just have to deal with the fallout, unfortunately, from having to have that conversation. So really, the more times you can practice that conversation with your patients, the better you will get at it, and the quicker you will get at recognizing the typical objections that people have and starting to address those objections before they even come up, which is really what, you know, selling cash services in your office is about. You have something that you know that they need, that they will benefit from. Now you have to anticipate the objections they're going to potentially have, whether it's financial, concern if it's going to work, payment plan offerings, and you can start to address those things ahead of time. You're also going to be starting to market outside and inside your office on the cash services that you're now offering. So I like the in-office approach of removing any reading material that is not related to this and having that available for people to look at, whether it's in the front room, it's in the exam rooms, wherever it is you guys have stuff for people. But I would make it easy to reach. Don't just have it up front. Don't just have it on the wall. Have it somewhere where they can actually pick up a pamphlet and leaf through it while they're waiting. Now, your out-of-office marketing is going to be very similar to your out-of-office marketing for the insurance patients that you are looking for, right? So we talked about, you know, where are these patients at? What are the other practices that they're going to? You know, an example would be for toenail fungus laser. You know, a lot of these people are going to a dermatology office. So make sure that you've got contacts with the dermatology office. This is the service you offer. Maybe you drop off some rack cards or pamphlets that they can hand out to the patients. And this is the kind of, you know, direct for that service marketing that you're going to be doing out of your own office. So let's say now you have a fairly high percentage of people in office of your current existing patient panel that you're converting over these cash services, and you're starting to really bring in new patients. The question becomes, okay, well, when do we make that decision about whether or not to drop this insurance that I don't want to take that's just paying me pennies on the dollar? And one really good way to think about it, especially if this is a higher percentage of your patient population insurance, is when you see the revenue coming in from that cash service at the same percentage that particular insurance makes up of your current patient population, that's probably a good time to drop them. That's just the easy way of doing the percentages so that you can feel fairly comfortable going ahead and dropping that insurance. This method has always made me feel a lot more comfortable with dropping some of these larger insurances and not having the large disruption in cash flow that I was expecting. And the example to look at is, you know, let's say that insurance A is an insurance that is really your lowest paying, but they're 25% of your practice. Now, let's say that you have brought in a cash service, and of those patients in insurance A, you've seen about 25% of them go ahead and proceed forward with paying out of pocket for things without too much objection. They're willing to do it, and it's relatively easy for them. Now we can comfortably say that we only need to make up for, let's say, 75% of the other patients, because let's just assume as soon as you drop that insurance, those people are going to leave. Not likely, but let's say that they did, right? That'd be the worst case scenario, and I'm all about prepping for the worst case scenario. If that 75% leaves, you know from looking at your billing audit what that revenue loss is going to be. Let's say that loss is going to be $7,500 a month in revenue. Let's just make it easy with the numbers. You now know that you've got to be able to increase somewhere else by $7,500 a month in order to make up for that 75% of people just walking away from insurance A. This is where you start consistently increasing the sale of these cash services to everybody, to where you have, on average, that $7,500 a month covered. This is where you can comfortably say, okay, I am done with insurance A. I'm going to go ahead and drop it. Now we know that if you drop that and that 75% of patients just leave from insurance A, you've made it up in the cash services elsewhere. So you're going to drop back down probably to your previous, you know, having dropped that insurance cash flow level. But that's what you wanted, at least minimum, right? And then from there, you can keep doing more cash services and keep building. So you will take a revenue hit with doing it, but it's at a level that you already know is very sustainable and it hasn't interrupted your cash flow. Couple of keys to doing this process. One, do not increase your expenses just to move along with your new revenue amount. You know, and that seems very self-explanatory, but it is something that needs to be watched because it is actually sneaky and it is pretty easy to do. So that's point one. Point two is being really patient with this process. You know, everybody will tell you marketing, whenever you're doing a new marketing campaign, takes at least 3 to 4 months to get any results. Well, this process is probably going to take you about a year, especially for a larger chunk of your patient population. I mean, it really depends on how big of a change you're trying to make. But for me, dropping Medicare at 25% of my practice, that was a long process. That took me about a year and a half to be able to comfortably get it to where we were doing enough cash services that I was able to drop that insurance without having that huge dip in cash flow on the month-to-month basis. So being really patient with it, even though that tends to not be an entrepreneur's gift, is something that we all need to make sure that we are heading into with a clear and open mind. The last thing that I want to kind of say about this is that, you know, you do not have to take every insurance. That there is no requirement that you do so. That has been the general expectation, especially amongst patients. And when we come out into private practice, we typically go with the assumption that we need to treat every single problem for everybody, A to Z, and we need to take every single insurance. And so that's how we set up our practices. And there's nothing wrong with that when you're literally just trying to build volume in your practice. But it is very easy in doing that to end up with a patient population insurance setup where we're getting paid pennies on the dollar and it gets really hard to make ends meet and we're overworked and we're overstressed and we're financially not doing well. So nobody said you had to take every insurance. It is perfectly fine to start that way and then start backing out of these insurances one by one based on that reimbursement. Now, some people will say you can renegotiate your contracts, all of these. I mean, you can. You certainly can. I have not really known private practices that have gotten very far with this. It's a lot easier if you're a large group. You've got more clout, more ability to negotiate. And you're not going to get the huge increases that typically you need when you find yourself in this situation. So please just keep in mind, nobody said you had to take all the insurances, but be prepared that when you start this process, you are going to have cranky patients. And there is a good chance that you are going to get bad reviews even for this. And I will say this is the only bad reviews I've ever had in my practice. We have like 5-star reviews all over, and then we have a couple of 1-stars because people are literally complaining that we dropped their insurance. The good news is these types of reviews, honestly, everybody can see through it. When they're complaining about having dropped an insurance, I would say 99% of people are like, oh yeah, I've heard of that happening. That really sucks. But that doesn't actually have anything to do with the office or the doctor or their ability to treat. So you're not going to need to worry about those types of bad reviews. But just know they're probably going to happen. So I hope this was valuable for everybody. I hope this gets you maybe thinking about really looking at the payer makeup of your practice, the patient mix in your practice, as a way to change things up for yourself, as a way to design a practice that really works for you and allows you to spend time with patients the way that you want to. You can certainly do a hybrid practice where you do some insurance, some cash. You can go full direct care. There is no right answer to this. It is whatever is going to work best for you. If these are changes that you are thinking you want to make within a practice and you decide you want the guidance, the accountability, the process, this is where it's really great to work with a coach for practice and for business. I know I've utilized different coaching services, both individual and groups, over the years, and those definitely were the times when I really made the most forward momentum in my business. So this is why I'm doing it now. If anyone would like to see if coaching is a good fit, feel free to reach out on the website, visionarypracticesolutions.com, or you can reach out directly to me at Dr. Sarah, S-A-R-A-H, V-P-S, @gmail.com. And I'd be happy to sit down and see if coaching is a good fit for you. Otherwise, best of luck. You've got this. And don't be afraid to make some big changes in your practice if that's what needs to happen. We'll see you next time.